Stories, fables, ghostly tales.
G'day, you legends. Now today I promised you lovely something very different, and I'm keeping my word as always. I wanted to bring something new to you lovelies in the form of an author interview. Now, I've had multiple authors reach out to me for different reasons, and each valid in their own right. But one interview opportunity stood out amongst the many, about a man who had lost his daughter at the young age of 10 months. Reading through his story and what motivated him to write his children's book was really astounding to me. With Hans reaching out to me to chat about his book, I felt that this would be a great opportunity to share his story, his journey, why he wrote the book that he did, challenges he faced, and how this book supported the memory of his loving daughter. I also asked him what techniques he used to overcome difficulties with writing techniques, and I encountered for the first time what it means to have a meter when it comes to writing for children's books. So today's episode will be an interview held with Hans Kahlberg, the author of the children's book Baby Aviva Orangutan Diva, A Jungle Quest to Discover Inner Strength. Enjoy.
G'day, Hans. How you doing?
G'day. Hi, Simon. How are you?
It's always good to put a face to the name. So yeah, it's always good. It's always really good.
How's it over there in California?
It's going well. It's pretty late at night here. It's 11 o'clock, but everyone's asleep, so that's a good thing. You know, it's kind of a Mediterranean climate. We are about 70, 75 in the daytime. So that's Fahrenheit. Yeah, it's pretty nice weather.
I'm trying to have a quick look. 75, 23 Celsius. Oh, nice. That's good temperature.
Yeah.
Also, I can see you've got an awesome guitar in the back there and a saxophone. Do you play both of those?
Yeah. So I'm messing around with the saxophone. The guitar, my wife's family is all musicians. So
they're all,
she comes from a big family of 10 kids. And she's the baby. And so like most of them, the older ones are kind of, you know, some of them were touring musicians and now they're kind of instructors. So yeah.
Goodness. That's awesome. All right. That's cool. I tried a bit of guitar myself and I play a bit of piano. So yep, you're in good company.
Nice.
So
nice. Yeah. But I'm not good at saxophone at all. So just
it looks cool.
To annoy the neighbors, I think. Maybe.
Late at night, 11 p.m. just cracking out some tunes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I'll start with the first question, which is basically, you know, tell us about yourself and from an author perspective, that is, as well as any inspirations that influence you to write. Because a lot of my listeners, they're often starting out as authors or they don't know where to start. So it'd be good to get understanding of what inspires you and what motivates you.
Yeah. So I've been writing from a young age, just in grammar school from, you know, writing stories, and creative writing is something that I've always really loved. But actually poetry has kind of been more of my forte, I would say. And I think it kind of came from, I'm a sappy romantic at heart. So it was really just, you know, writing these poems to ex-girlfriends and crushes and things like that. But when I met my wife, it was, it just kind of came out like every single day, there's like a new poem and it was just kind of coming to you. And, you know, any writer who's been in that mode can really kind of attest to how fast creativity actually comes to you. But when I became a father almost 5 years ago now, my eldest son is about 5 years old, it just became, you know, more about stories and more about, you know, telling him stories of fantastical tales of cars or unicorns or giraffes. I literally just put them down an hour ago or so. And the story was about a giraffe that couldn't dance and was really shy and everything. But yeah, it's always fun just to create a story. And yes, that's kind of how it came to children's stories. And so combining the poetry, the rhyming, the meter, the verse, as well as kind of thinking a little bit outside the box in terms of what you can make up. So
that's great. Is it daily that you're sitting down with your kids to go through those short stories?
Yeah. So we have a bedtime routine. It's one book and one story. Sometimes I get two books if they beg hard enough. But yeah, so you know, bedtime routine is usually about 45 minutes at the least, not more. But yeah, so I give them an option. So one of the things that I actually do is let them pick the main characters. And so my two eldest kids, you know, sometimes my daughter can pick like a unicorn and my son picks a race car. And so all of a sudden we have, you know, a unicorn driving a race car. And then there's like you know, some kind of commotion or some kind of, usually a conflict is always a main part of the story. So
it's interesting, so, a bit of like improv with your kids. Plus, are you ever using any of these ideas for like future books that you write?
Yeah. No, it's total improv. It's total improv. And I'm kind of like storing stuff in my head, but I'm not actually writing them down, which I probably should. But I don't know if you know this. There's a show here in the States. It's called Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes. It's fantastic.
A great show in the past. And it was like that. It was audience participation. They throw out different things. And I always used to love that show. So that's pretty much how the bedtime goes with storytelling.
They're very lucky. And it's also not an easy job to do. My goodness. Sheesh.
No. Especially when it's been a long day and you're tired.
Because you're saying about an hour ago you put them to bed, right? So you're doing all that 45 minutes prior to that and then come on to chat to myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Usually they get down by 8 o'clock, but it's good. So
that's great. So on to my next question regarding how you broke in as an author. So what was the first sort of stepping stone? So getting these ideas, what was that first break in to go, no, I should write these down. I should go off and I should do X, Y, Z to get into that sphere.
Yeah. So it was really just all of these kind of stories accumulated over time. And I've always wanted to be a children's book author. As a dad, you're reading all these books and some of them are just, you know, lame, but for whatever reason, the kids want to read it again and again and again. And they get really attached to it. So that was always percolating in the back of my head. But it wasn't until my family, we lost our third child, Aviva, last year in November 2020, tragically to an unknown cause. We still don't know, you know, how she died or what she died of. But it was because of her that I wanted to have something to commemorate her life, but also have her siblings remember who she was and also share her personality with the world, who she was, this bubbly, loving, carefree, joyous little girl that I knew very well as her father. I was just beyond heartbroken. I was just saddened that a lot of other people wouldn't be able to meet her, the friends that she would have had in kindergarten, or, you know, the lifelong, you know, life events that I wanted her to have. I felt that this was a way to commemorate her life, you know, in eternity, to allow other people to really know her, but also know her story and message that she has for the world.
Well, fantastic.
That's it in a nutshell, but yeah.
That initial leap, was that moving into creativity and books, or just the very, I'm pretty sure you've written other books in this space. Is that correct?
I've written a few parenting. Other books, but more like, you know, parenting books, like one, there's book like Dad Hacks, but this is my first children's book.
Wow.
Yeah. In terms of the motivation to do it, there was no lack of that.
Of course.
I actually wrote the script, the original script, about a week after she died, about a week after she passed. And this was, you know, when I was in the throes of, you know, of grief, and oftentimes you hear people losing a loved one. It was this case for me. There's a burst of creativity. There's just a lot of creativity that I want to express, right? There's a lot of emotions that are just bottled up and you want to, you know, get it out somehow. And when the tears don't come anymore because you've just been crying so much, there's other ways to actually express those emotions and those feelings. But for me, you know, there's a saying that someone actually told me even the day after she died, that when you lose your parents, you lose your past. When you lose your spouse, you lose your present. And when you lose your kids, you lose your future. And for me, you know, I don't want to accept that. It's just, it doesn't sit well with me. And I certainly want her to still have a really good future and still have a really good, you know, future wherever she is. And I think through this book, her legacy will still live. And even though she won't ever physically get to meet people, others will get to know who she is. And that's the future that I want to build for my daughter.
That's fantastic. I mean, the book that you've written is definitely already reaching out to other kids and families and changing people. Like, I know for a fact, I've seen the reviews, I've read through them. They're all amazingly positive and no surprise. But the reach that you've got is your goal is definitely being achieved. Definitely. My next query in regards to the inspiration being your daughter. So it'd be good to understand more about Aviva's personality. So what you thought were the key characteristics that you would put in that character as Aviva, what were the choice selection of her most endearing traits? Like, why did you pick them? And do you think that's the reason why it's so successful?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking that, Simon. I really love talking about Aviva, and I really, you know, one of the misconceptions about parents who have lost children is that they don't want to talk about their children, but that couldn't be farther from the fact.
Okay, great.
You know, I love talking about her all the time. And so a little about her personality. She was just this bubbly character, you know, had two older siblings and really always looked up to them. And so was always just kind of following them around and everything. And I told you that my wife's family is very musical. And so we always have music going on in the house, whether it's someone playing or even, you know, the kids singing. But I'll just relate one story. My son was playing a harmonica and he really loves that little instrument. And this was a day or two before she actually passed. She was sitting there, you know, right in front of him, you know, dancing, just dancing around and just smiling, like this big, big smile. She looked up to her brother, but she was just very carefree, you know, went with anything that life threw her way. She went through a lot of different obstacles in and out of the hospital six different times. You know, she always embraced it with this can-do attitude, this spirit that nothing going to stop me and nothing's going to get in my way. Another story about her is she loved to eat. She ate everything and anything in her path. I would actually say that she had her dad's stomach because I love to eat. And so anything she got her hands on, actually the way that we got her to crawl for the very first time was we bribed her with a little cracker
and
put it, you know, a couple of paces in front of her and she started moving and lo and behold, you know, she was motivated by that little cracker. But she loved all types of fruit. She loved bananas, which is actually a big thing in the book. But there's this one story where we were on a road trip and during COVID took a lot of different family trips like that. And we stopped on the side of the road. There's this vendor selling cherries. And cherries, as you know, are very messy to eat if you're not putting them in your mouth and you get them on your hands. Well, you know, she got this bag of cherries and, you know, we're driving and then 30 minutes later, we look back and she has just red cherry juice all over her face. And she looked like a little Dracula. So it was just hilarious to see that. But yeah, I think, you know, those are the qualities and characteristics that she had. And she just, you know, her smile is another big thing. Her smile, her laugh, just a cutest little giggle. And I would say, you know, the easiest of our three kids, definitely the easiest to take care of. So
that's fantastic. It sounded like she was definitely a bigger than life personality and slightly mischievous, right? So, of course.
Yeah. It's funny. And just on that note, now that she's passed and she's no longer here, my other two children, whenever they get into some, you know, some kind of trouble, like they eat the cookies or maybe they broke something or made a mess, they blame it on their sister, Aviva.
Serious?
It's like, wait a minute.
Gosh.
You can't be blaming Aviva. She definitely didn't do it. But that's how they, you know, whenever they get caught red-handed. So it's funny,
cheeky.
But, yeah, very cheeky.
In constructing these questions, you know, I wasn't sure how to approach the topic, especially when you said that most parents, I would imagine, wouldn't necessarily want to talk about the children that passed. It's fascinating. Not only did you take the creativity path, but you also chose to remember her in a totally different way than others would never even dream of. It's actually, honestly, not only a feel-good story. Talk about refocusing that lens, creating a memory that's going to literally last forever and impact so many people. It's commendable. So I just want to say that, just as a heads up.
Yeah. No, thanks, Simon. And honestly, there was literally no other thought in my mind. Like I have to do this. And it was the first thought. And it was just, you know, I have to let the world know who she is. I have to get her out there into the world and share her story, because that was, for me, one of the hardest things about losing her is that, you know, I don't want to lose her future. And by doing this, now I have, you know, a prop that I can sit here and talk about her and let people be inspired by her, be motivated by her, but also, you know, understand her message, which I'm, you know, almost a vessel, a channel for getting her message out. So that's how I kind of see my purpose. There's definitely a lot of reordering of what's the value and what your purpose is. And so for me right now, that is top of mind.
On that topic as well, with regards to that grieving process, like when it comes to resilience in this book, to show children the idea and concept of what resilience is, that was that easier and what or difficult? And what process did you take or what examples did you give the kids to identify what resilience was?
Yeah, I think adversity is something that we all as humans will face at some point in our life. And it starts when you're a little kid, you know, the adversity of not getting your toy or getting hurt on the playground or getting into a conflict, maybe a bully in school. And so we all come to that. So that's what makes this particular type of conflict a relatable issue. In this case, it's the family's out of food and they're looking for bananas. Aviva comes eye to eye with this fearsome beast of the jungle, this tiger. And she wonders, you know, how do I actually overcome this obstacle? How do I actually go out and achieve this task of getting these bananas? She sits there and thinks for a minute and just realizes that she already has everything that she needs to actually overcome this and uses her own strengths, which for her is the singing and dancing component and this ability to charm people. Or animals in this case. And so she ends up singing and dancing and the tiger becomes just amused with it. And then all of a sudden becomes enchanted and starts dancing as well, which when you talk about defeating a tiger, you'll talk about maybe throwing some sticks or some rocks or doing something with violence. But in this case, it was a nonviolent way to overcome this particular obstacle and overcome your fears as well. We all have our own fears and whatever those are, searching deep within yourself, there's ways to really overcome those. And so that was it. And the real life story of Aviva's resilience is that she was in and out of the hospital, as I said, six different times. And every single time she just battled it and had a big smile on her face at the end of the day. So yeah, that's
amazing.
That's one of the big stories, big underlying messages that I want to get out in the book is really, you know, by being true to your own self, are certainly ways you just have to maybe think outside of the box a little bit to overcome your fears. But when you put your mind to something, you can really do it.
I mean, thinking about being like your little animal trying to take on a tiger, I mean, physical violence really isn't an option. So, you know, using your brain and being charming and enchanting, I mean, that's possibly one of the only ways being, you know, ingenious and also sneaky right in there, pretty smart writing. So, from a kid's perspective, when they're reading that and they're understanding that violence isn't the only way, and two, they can quickly realize seeing a giant tiger, there's no opportunity to physically harm this beast. So I think, you know, that careful writing, as you know, going in and out of hospital for, you know, six times, that in resilience in itself obviously portrayed through that tiger, the tiger being that surmountable object.
Yeah, and then a third layer that I'm trying to get across, but it's very subdued. It's really kind of the resilience of grief in and of itself. And for me, this is certainly a huge outlet. I'm trying to refill my cup, you know, my cup of happiness, you know, has just been completely decimated little by little with every single reader that reads this book. That's just one little drop in that cup. But the grieving journey is very difficult. It's very hard. And there's no right way or wrong way to do it. And everyone's unique in and of itself, but there's a certain amount of resilience to overcoming what's, for parents, one of the biggest tragedies one can actually face. And so that's kind of a third layer to that.
I'll throw a bit of a curveball and you can correct me. Was there any resentment from the people that you knew and love about what you were doing?
No, there was, you know, my wife was definitely my biggest supporter and definitely biggest champion. You know, she was right there from the start, from when I was just writing out on a piece of paper. She backed me fully. And for me, that's really the only voice that matters. You know, I'm certainly very good at blocking out any other voices. My mom and I, we went head to head a lot of times. And so I got very accustomed to kind of blocking out authority and not really listening. But of course, I have to listen to my wife. And so, you know, she was fully behind it and blessed the project in and of itself, even though for her grieving journey is completely different. If you would ask her, she would say, you know, she wants to keep Aviva to herself and that relationship that she has with her. She doesn't necessarily want that to be public, but she realizes that I'm completely different. And for me,
being able to talk about her is actually a healing mechanism for me in and of itself.
It's that cathartic approach to communicating with others, what you're feeling.
Yes, yes, exactly. Also just letting them know about my daughter. So,
and that kind of moves me on to that next query with regards to being true to oneself. So that was the path you chose. That echoes throughout the book. Do you have any examples of what Aviva did in this case?
Yeah. You know, every single time that she came across a lot of adversity, she would be very open to it. And, you know, we could see that she was in pain a few different times and would never lose her character and her smile. I would say that was the biggest thing, her smile and her laughter, her joy. You know, I can recount many times when she looked like she was in bad shape and she would just crack a smile and just look over at me. She actually responded very well, even when she was in the womb, to my singing. So I wow. love singing to her and it would always calm her down. I was pretty good at getting her to sleep. I was actually the favorite parent to get her down for nap time and bedtime. And it was always, you know, lullabies and actually a lot of Elvis Presley and
nice.
Louis Armstrong.
Oh, gosh.
You know, like wise men say
nice.
Only fools rush in. That's, you know, it's incredibly, you know, lullaby-ish.
Right? Yeah. So she's like a child with a spark. And you can just tell when you see children like that, they just bundles of joy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll show you a little,
wow. Oh, that's an awesome picture.
She just had the best smile and
wow.
Yeah. I always say I'm not ever going to have a favorite child, but I guess I can still have, I can have a favorite child now, but she's,
oh, that's just gorgeous. That's lovely. In regards to vocabulary with writing your book, so what would be the age group with regards to these kind of bigger concepts? Drill that down so kids can understand them. Like, is there a technique or what do you go through to write like that?
Yeah, so the age range for this book is 2 to 8. Although I have some nephews and nieces that are about 10, 11, 12, that, and they love it as well. But I found from, you know, the people that have been reading it, a lot of my friends, kids around about 4 or 5, I'd say is kind of the sweet spot. But in terms of getting those messages across is a really good question, because my editor was actually editor at Disney Books at one point. You know, she came to me and said, you know, it's really, really difficult to incorporate a lot of these deep messages while also having a rhyming book, because, you know, rhymes definitely limit you in terms of the words, but also the meter and how that actually sounds. If you're flowing right, a lot of the underlying messages actually come out towards the end. Teamwork, one of the last pages is really, you know, the best things in life can't be accomplished alone. And that's true for almost anything. You know, starting a company, I've been an entrepreneur in the past. You know, you have to have the right teammate, or marriage, you have to have the right partner. Whatever it is, the best things in life, I think, happen with someone else and sharing that experience. And so that was a very direct one. It's kind of introduced at the very kind of beginning when Sophia and Aviva, the elephant, is Sophia, come together and form this team. And so yeah, it's there's some subtlety to it. The very last one is staying true to yourself. You kind of have to outright, you know, just say that. But it is difficult. It is a challenge. It's not you get these children's books and there's one main theme to it. But I think here there's actually 4 or 5 different yeah. ones, in terms of she was willing to face off against this tiger when nobody else would even cross the river. You know, and she just didn't have that fear. So then using your innate talents, your inner strengths to overcome adversity, and then teamwork and the other ones we've already talked about.
So the meter you mentioned, right? I don't think I've heard that term thrown around too often. Is the meter referring to like the gauge at which children can absorb that information?
It's more about kind of the meter is kind of the either like a staccato. It's like 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, or, you know,
yep.
1 and 1 and 2, 3 and 4. Yeah. Just kind of like that. And we were just talking on the phone and counting things out like that, which to me, I never even knew.
Yeah.
So, and you know, it makes sure that you cut off, you know, words that don't make sense, or there's one, like instead of saying across, I would just say cross, just to make sure.
So that kind of like creating a cadence for the kids to kind of move along with and read along with.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. Oh, that's fantastic. Exactly. The words you picked when you're writing any sort of short story or a novel or a kid's book in this case, I mean, kid's books sound like a whole different breed on their own, like how you manage and how you write, because the words you have on that page have to be limited, like you're saying, but also they have to all carry that weight, that heavy burden of every word being so poignant and needing to be there.
Yeah, no, you definitely have to kind of open up. Like you can't open up the thesaurus because, you know, some of the words that are just too big. And so if you think of like Dr. Seuss, you know, he used very, very small words, and in places where he couldn't actually make a rhyme, he would just make up a word. if you read like the Lorax or something, like, or the Grinch, like there's words that he just makes up just to fit in space. So that's one way. Maybe for my next book, I'll kind of go that route because that sounds a little bit easier.
I was going to ask you, have you thought of breaking that rule, that whole structure, and just going straight for the throat and just making up a whole word?
Yeah. I don't know. Possibly. But yeah, so it definitely took a little bit of back and forth, and there was definitely a lot of red marks on my first draft. But actually, there's one part where Aviva's swinging through the jungle like Tarzan. And so I used Tarzan, but she cut that out. She said, you can't use Tarzan. It's, you know, copyright word. And because she worked at Disney and Disney owns Tarzan.
Oh, good save. She cut that one out. So, yeah. I didn't realize that Tarzan himself was actually copyright. I thought maybe it would have been like public domain, but I'm guessing not. Wow.
Yeah, I think when you use it like that, yeah, it is.
Sheesh.
That's what I found out. So,
did you have any like major challenges when you wrote this book? So like anything that kind of, you know, not necessarily writer's block, but in this case, it would be more to do with like limitations, like using Tarzan's good example. But were there any other major issues with workflow? So writing from A to Z, the word limitation was one, Tarzan two. Were there any other challenges with regards to developing the concept? Was there a challenge in which path you would take and what animal you would pick?
Yeah. So actually, you know, in terms of the characters of the book, once you read it, like you'll notice all these characters, they're a little bit outside the norm, but they all kind of originate from parts of Indonesia, Borneo and Sumatra. So orangutans are native to that part of the world. And that's where a lot of deforestation is happening. And a lot of these animals are endangered. So there's Malayan tiger, that's the tiger. There's, you know, elephants there, there's tapirs, there's sloths. So I wanted to actually call attention to these animals. I'm a big fan of animals, animal lover, I would say. Another, you know, aspect of choosing the characters. And so with the illustrator, Carl Mefford, who did a fantastic job, we actually went through a lot of these characters and made sure that they looked realistic. And that part, you know, the character drawing was really fun. But in terms of the orangutan, one of our very last family outings, 3 days before she passed, we went to the zoo. And San Diego has a really nice zoo here. And long day at the zoo, the two other toddlers were losing it. It was like nap time. It was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, hot day. They were just like lying down on the ground. And Aviva, meanwhile, had been sitting in my pouch in my chest. And so she had already, by the time we came to the very last animals, which were the orangutans, and she was just fascinated by these orangutans, just watching, just entranced with, you know, what they were doing, climbing up these different ropes and obstacle courses and everything else. We stayed there for about 20 minutes talking to the zookeeper, and she just had this connection, this bond. And I've always loved orangutans myself, and they're intelligent creatures. They're often kind of overlooked, I would say, somewhat not the most beautiful creatures, I would probably put it, but in terms of, in terms of their intelligence, in terms of, you know, kind of how they connect with humans, I would say they're kind of top of, you know, the ape family. So they're often confused with monkeys. They're actually apes.
Even I made that mistake. I called a monkey whale.
Yeah. No, it's easy. It's a common mistake. But yeah. So that was kind of why we picked an orangutan, and there's not many books about orangutans to tell you the truth.
You see, right.
A lot of monkey books and gorilla books, but yeah.
Well, I think that's what also stands out when people look online and the categories, and it's got like, you know, monkeys and apes, but orangutan doesn't even equate in that formula for people's search patterns. It's just fascinating. Yeah. So definitely, yeah. it's a kind of a double whammy where you've got this beautiful animal linked to your lovely daughter, and the fact that underrepresented orangutans in a field of fictional, I guess, fictional books to bring kids in. It's just lovely. If you were to give new authors some advice, people who are just starting out and are not sure where to start in producing a book, is it as simple as literally going to MS Word or any sort of notebook, writing down your key ideas, and then thinking about the end game, you know, writing it for kids or writing your demographic last and just getting an understanding of what message you want to get across first? Like, how did you do it?
Yeah. So I told you that I've been an entrepreneur in my past life. Mm-hmm. And so part of that is really kind of trying to find the right product market fit, right? Talking about an audience of small kids and toddlers. And so as a storyteller at night, with three little kids, now two physically here, you know, I tell a story every night. Every single night I get to test a new product, right? A new story and get to see the reactions. And those reactions are kind of born in, you know, the questions, the questions that they're asking, or if, you know, the next day they kind of, you know, ask more about it or, you know, how engaged they are. Or if they're laughing, you know, a lot of times, you know, there's often funny stories and just make things up that are just a little ludicrous. But yeah, it's with that, like that's, you know, practice what it is. And so like, even though this is my first official children's book, you know, it's certainly not my first children's story at all. And so I would say that's for me has been really beneficial. I would say in terms of the structure and the outline of the book, we were talking about kind of this improv and taking characters and creating a plot out of it. For me, I always kind of have a crescendo and so give the backdrop, have a description of the surroundings and get really like in the weeds of describing the background and then introduce a conflict, something like a dragon that comes in or something that really causes adversity. You have the protagonist usually being the one to kind of resolve those conflicts. And at the end, for kids, having a happy ending.
That's for sure. For sure.
Pretty bad. Just leave with an unresolved ending. But yeah, usually that does the trick. And hopefully 5 minutes later, they're fast asleep. But that's kind of how I craft my stories.
That's lovely. So I guess if you're going to give yourself advice in that space, as to what to avoid when designing this book or writing for kids, what would be like one key point that you would communicate to yourself or, you know, other authors that are in this space trying to break into that sector?
I would say don't go it alone. Definitely get an editor. There's a lot of improvement, I would say, from the first draft to the final, and iterations going back and forth. And a lot of times she actually gave me, you know, leeway for me to choose different words or different sentences. And she was like, you know, this doesn't fit, you know, make something better. So I had her, but I also had a sounding board, you know, with family and friends, that I was able to read this to and kind of just get a live audience and make sure that the funny parts are supposed to be funny and the messages are supposed to come through. And it's funny now, you know, just reading, you know, reviews on Amazon or Goodreads or something. A lot of times people are taking different things from the book that kind of resonate with them, because when you think about the readers, they always kind of read it from their own perspective. And so if they're having a trouble with their teamwork, maybe they're getting the team element for it. Or if they're having trouble being true to yourself, maybe they get that. One other thing is the protagonists are actually female. So Sophia and Aviva, they're the real life sisters, by the way, but they kind of defeat this tiger. And so female empowerment is another underlying theme. So people get out different things from the book, and it's not until you actually go out and test it with people that you kind of, you know, see what they're getting from it.
What seems like a normal children's book is far from it. It's packed full of amazing things. And the more you explain, the more deeper dive you give into this, the more I understand writing it and designing it. But there's a lot of themes in there that would be so difficult to subtly implement in a kid's book, let alone even a short story, in regards to getting one person and other groups of people to perceive that same book in so many different ways.
Yeah. The final thing I would say, and this cannot be understated enough, is get a really good illustrator, you know, or an illustrator that you work with very well. And so children are very, they do judge a book by its cover, even though we're not supposed to do that in real life, right? But they see the final product and they can tell if it's quality illustrations or not. But Carl was one of actually 10 different illustrators I interviewed. Wow. and went through portfolios and read reviews and then actually, you know, talked to them. But we just had a really good rapport, just working back and forth, and everything was actually messages, sending me files and I commenting and giving stuff back. But it starts with the very first paginations of the book were just stick figures, really.
Yeah, storyboarded. Yeah. Just wanna,
yeah, have the storyboard and see where things fit and see where words fit before you even get into the character drawings, which we got like 5 different iterations of what a beagle would look like. And I kind of suggested that maybe we can kind of like make her look a little like my real life daughter. And he kind of pushed back and it's like, you know, that'd be a little creepy, which I think he was right. He actually used to work at Scholastic Books and, you know, he's just done a fantastic job. So I gave him a lot of leeway in what he was designing, but there's a lot of cool illustrations and little things that are subtle that because I was self-publishing, I was able to kind of get in. I'm a big surfer and there's one part of the book where she's actually surfing down a tree, which is really cool. And, you know, there's little birds and bees and butterflies and those are kind of representative of the afterlife. So just different things like that.
The two kind of takeaways I got from that as well was that you know, trust your editor or find a good one, trust your artist and communicate really like effective communication. I get a feeling like even in business, right? When you have someone that maybe isn't meeting your artistic requirement, but they communicate effectively so you can get them to where you want them to be is absolutely critical. So I'd imagine that would be, I guess, similar perhaps in this case where there's pushback in regards to artistic flavor, but through really good communication, there's and that trust was built, you're able to pick that right person for the job.
Yeah. And I was able to kind of communicate my ideas and just things that are in my head. And he was able to actually just execute things like how he already had a pretty good idea of what he wanted to illustrate. So
absolutely awesome. I always love hearing good stories about artists' work because I always hear horror stories about, you know, paid X amount of dollars and we got to the last point and then all of a sudden it's completely not what I wanted. And it's another month's worth of work. Like, was there a fast turnaround for his work? Or like, was it months? Was it weeks or even days?
Yeah, I had our very first call on January 1st, 2021, this year. And I think he delivered his final packet, I think, in April. But yeah, that was kind of the time frame.
Nice.
Worked with.
That's impressive. Yeah. Especially with all that the concept art behind it all. Gosh.
But yeah, but it was a lot of iteration. It was a lot of back and forth, you know, from the stick figures to everything else.
So, that's the best part about storyboarding. You can kind of get you can understand the physical connection with each character to another. And then the theme can it be conveyed through that physical movement? Tricky, but fun.
Yeah. Even when he had the final illustrations, you know, filling it in with the color, mm-hmm. we had different, you know, either paints or pastels different types of color even, which makes a big difference. So
yeah,
a lot of these things is really cool to learn. Definitely a big learning experience for me.
Yeah, the art medium plays a big part, especially to kids. Like you said, they do judge the book by its cover and everything in it. Because they can't understand the words, they can at least get the vibrancy and the soft colors. I've noticed in your book, the colors are quite soft and easy on the eyes. And that's obviously on purpose. It makes easy reading as well. So it's kind of like a dreamland effect. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can read it a couple of times and you'll still see like some new things. There's a part where Tito the tiger and Aviva are hugging. They put their arms around each other. And in the background, there's these leaves that kind of come over their heads and it's in the shape of a heart. So there's, you know, just little things like that are cool.
That's really cool. Did you want to jump right into reading your book?
Yeah, I definitely would love to do that. I'll go ahead and read it right now. And just so you know, I am originally from the south part of the United States in North mm-hmm. Carolina. And so the very first sentence is called yee-haw.
Okay, go for it.
That's kind of from my southern roots. But all right, here it goes. Baby Aviva, orangutan diva. Yee-haw. Out of the darkness and into the light, a rocket, comet, or maybe a star so bright. Swinging from the treetops was Baby Aviva. just 2 feet tall, the orangutan diva. A rainbow of bright colors and a dress of green. The most vibrant outfit that you've ever seen. Zipping on down from the tops of the trees. Good morning, she sang to the birds and the bees. Her voice rang out clearly, a sweet little tune. Her melody carried right up to the moon. Tummy rumbling, she did a shimmy down a tree. She searched for bananas, but where could they be? Hard as she looked, there were none to be found.
Holy moly, guacamole,
she cried, her jaw dropping to the ground.
We're out of bananas? No, that can't be right.
Maybe they're just hiding out of our sight?
It's true, I'm afraid, Mama said with a frown. We must cross the river, though I fear we might drown.
She was right. No ape, monkey, or goat had crossed in quite some time, for the tigers were roaming and crocs were waiting in line. But the time was urgent. Her family was out of food.
I'll go, said Aviva. Is anyone else in such a brave mood?
I'll come, said Sophia. I'm brave and I'm strong. I'll help you to cross with my trunk 10 feet long.
Great! Nothing's too scary for my friend Sophia and I. We'll pluck those bananas right out of the sky.
So off the two went across the raging river, a place that nobody dared go and barely even said with a shiver. When they reached the cliff's edge, Aviva had a plan. She would slide down Sophia's trunk and swing with one hand. Up upon high, they could see lots of bananas below. Her heart pumping, yet fearless, she was ready to go.
Whoosh, went Aviva. She flew through the air, landing ever so gently where others don't dare.
She perched on the treetop and searched upon high. Until at long last, the golden fruit caught her eye. But as she crept closer, a roar filled the skies. Her heart jumped in fear at that sudden surprise. Lurking below was what others feared most, an animal mean enough to scare a ghost. Bright yellow eyes peered up from far beneath. A menacing snarl showed up sharp, pointy teeth. Aviva looked down. She had seen things far worse. Scared she was not of this loud, frightful curse. The tiger, she knew, could become her new friend. Just be yourself, she thought. Do not pretend. Tito the tiger wagged his tail as if to give a warning sign, but soon became shocked when he saw Aviva smiling in the sunshine. Aviva began to sing, rhythmic and sweet. Far below, Tito's feet swayed to the beat. What first was a shuffle became a full-out dance.
Whee!
He said, moving his feet in a prance. He grooved to the music, he howled out with glee. Now, Aviva was excited to climb down that tree. Aviva said,
move your body like this, okie dokie.
Soon, they were dancing a mix between salsa and the hokey pokey.
Beep, bobbity doo wop, beep, bam, boom.
The orangutan and the tiger were having a party at high noon. They shook their hands, waved their tails, then stomped their feet. The new pals were working up a sweat under tropical heat. Soon they got hungry and realized it was time to eat. Taking a break, Tito offered up a piece of meat.
Can I have a banana? Aviva said, please?
And maybe some extra to bring across the trees? Aviva was proud. She'd remembered her task.
Of course, Tito said. All you had to do was ask. They smiled at each other as they both scarfed them down. Putting her arms around him, Aviva said, You're the coolest tiger in town. So a friendship was born over snacks and a song. Because Aviva was brave, her family wouldn't be hungry for long. As she walked back with Sophia, she was glad to go home. The best things in life can't be accomplished alone. But above all, Aviva the Diva was true to herself. And at the end of the day, that's what matters most above everything else. The end.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic, Hans. Thank you so much for sharing that.
All right.
Nailed it. Well done.
That was fun. Yeah, that was really fun. I really appreciate that.
No worries. I can't wait. I'll do my own magic and I can't wait to share it with the gang on the podcast. Maybe there's something in your own. You can do your own podcast and you can share these kind of stories. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's fun. But it's just really fun, you know, having these conversations, to tell you the truth. I really enjoy it and really appreciate your time and for having me on the show.
Oh, likewise, mate. Likewise.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you know, yeah, the last thing I would say is like, you're like, just craft this vision or craft this remembrance of my daughter. And one of the things at her celebration of life ceremony, because of COVID, not many people, first of all, could attend, but even during her 10 months and 13 days here on earth, you know, not many people could even knew her. My brother never got the chance to meet her. My parents really didn't know her. You know, if you go to funerals, you have all these people telling stories about this loved one, this dearly departed, that how he or she has impacted their lives, or, you know, funny events or stories, you know, from their past, or legacies that they're carrying on. And it was just sad, just really disheartening to know that, you know, my wife and I, her primary caretakers, had all these stories, but not many other people did. Through this medium, through this channel, I'm certainly trying to share her and create that story for other people to remember her by. So
fantastic. Well, hopefully I can be a helpful champion in spreading that word and sharing that love. It's just fantastic.
Thank you so much, Simon. I really appreciate that. And yeah, just a final message to all parents out there, cherish your children and lead by example and by love.
Mates, thank you all for listening to today's episode. A huge thank you for being on the podcast, Hans. You are an absolute joy to have on the show. You're always welcome back. Folks, be sure to check out his book, where you can find it on Amazon via audiobook on Kindle, hardcover, and paperback. Or you can listen to it also on Google Play Store and Apple iBooks. I'll be including the links where you can support his book in the episode notes. Or you can search Baby Aviva Orangutan Diva, and I'll assure you it'll pop up. It's a unique name for sure. Mates, this was a real pleasure talking to Hans. And I'm sure you guys and girls could hear it in my voice, and how much I enjoyed sharing his story, his book, and the loving memory of his daughter Aviva. There really is something special about sharing stories like this, and stories with motivational sources coming directly from a really passionate and caring place. And in this case, to make children smile. So if you do get a chance to support Hans and buy his book in whichever format, be sure to leave a review to help others know how good it is, just as you lovelies do for my show. Right now, Hans is sitting on 79 reviews, and that's 79 kids who are now smiling from ear to ear. So great work, Hans. I hope you get many, many more reviews your way. Folks, thank you so much for listening. To my Patreon members, I'll be putting a vote up, and you can let me know if you would like more of these kinds of episodes. Speaking of Patreons, I want to thank the legends that support this show right now. My Patreon supporters are Mega Samaya, Queen of the Felines, my Ode Night Tea Titan. Mate, thank you so much, Maya, for your contribution to this show. You wrap a belt around the waist of this podcast and skip it into the stratosphere. Thanks to your support, I'm able to continue to improve the show's quality with better equipment and also ensure that the podcast can try new and adventurous topics just like this episode today. With your support, mate, we're one step closer to doing even more amazing things. Thank you immensely, Maya, for being so darn epic. Not an episode goes up without your input. You're bloody marvellous. My white tea warlord, Lazuka Bowersaurus Rex, Lezamate. Hope you're doing fantastically. Thank you, man, for giving the podcast the old step up in the video editing department. Thanks to you, mate, I'm able to try new editing tools and also continue subscription on tools like Filmora X, which is frankly marvellous. Editing twice as fast thanks to your support, and your donation goes straight into production. Thank you so much, Leza. And my second white tea warlord, because I'm lucky to have two, Paige the Knowledge S, Queen of Insight. Paige, thank you immensely for your support. It's an absolute treat to hear from you and talk about a high achiever that you are. I am glad for your success, Paige. And thank you, mate, for supporting me, because I'm able to really shine with this new microphone that you've helped support me getting. And trialing new recording techniques is an absolute blast with this new microphone. Thank you immensely, Paige. And the brilliant tea warriors that supercharge this show, my Earl Grey enforcers, I'm lucky to have. Just Heather, Juicebox Andy, Peter Raffelli, Dolphin and Cow, Michelangelo Yacone, Divided by Zero, Leah Fassig, and Alia Arcane. Thank you all for being part of this podcast, and every dollar you do sent my way goes into punching up and uploading better content. This Friday is going to be another special episode, so join me then, and I promise you, it'll be perfect for that Halloween vibe. As always, mates, till next we meet.